Once again, my name is Mike. I'm an addict. So anyway, I'm going to introduce our speaker for the evening, and him and me go way, way back, all of 10 days. When I volunteered to chair this meeting, which I haven't done in a long time, although I have spoken, told my story here, afterwards he actually came up and volunteered and said he'd love to tell his story here. What I do know about Paul is when I was in Cottage C and I was a mess, or so I've heard, I remember, number one, not wanting to be there, number two, feeling like crap, and number three, seeing a guy up there that had something I didn't, and I, actually, he was really hardcore. I mean, I was like, whoa, this is a bit much, bro. You know, I'm in here for 2 days, and we went through all 12 steps in 15 minutes when he was there. But nonetheless, I also found out that he's not even alumni of this hospital, but he's been coming here for 15 more, 17, 20, not even alumni, and he's been coming here every Tuesday night for 20 years and bringing his guidance and his care and his word with the 12 steps to the people in Cottage C that could really use it. So with that, my best and long friend, Paul.
Is this on? I wonder what I'm going to say tonight. Before I even start, thank you, Mike. I want to thank, first of all, I'll explain what Mike alluded to, but I just want to thank the alumni for being the alumni and giving me some place to go for the last 21 years on Tuesday nights. And with that, I'd like to thank Sam, and because you know, not every place in the world has this kind of group or this kind of thing going on, really. And it's pretty much been a miracle for me. With that said, I'd also like to thank my wife. She's here tonight. She lives with an alcoholic, and that's pretty rough stuff. And the next thing I'd like to thank before I even get started here is, on Tuesday night, I can't remember, for a long, long time now, Steve has been coming in, and we work together as sort of like Laurel and Hardy, you know. I'm kind of like the straight guy, and he does the insight, the smart stuff. And he's such an inspiration, just a great guy. Tuesday, I sit there and I'm learning. I should be taking notes there. Steve is talking. He's brilliant. Steve, you're brilliant. And he really gets it. So with that said, what I want to talk to tonight about is joy, okay? But I'm going to get back to that, but that's where we're going. So what was it like, what happened, and you know, what's it like now? What it was like for me when I first crawled through the doors was no joy. And it was a long, long period of no joy. It was not a short period. It wasn't a bad 2 years. It was like a drunk 10 years. It was like over the top, past whatever, for 10 long years before I came in here. Now, I live not too far from here, and going up South Cobb Drive, I always pass Ridgeview, and as an active alcoholic, it's the last thing you want to look at when pass or see was Ridgeview. So I would probably avert my eyes when I would come past it. But it's kind of amazing just how things kind of work. So I was I didn't start off as an alcoholic, but I sure as hell ended up as one. And I had several different things happen during my career, and I've had some pretty good successes along the way, although those had a tendency to dwindle away as my joy also dwindled away as this disease really took hold of me. At one point in time, I was working in a pretty nice job, and I had a secretary, and she just couldn't get to work on time. And finally, I said to her, I said, look, if you can't get here, next time, don't even come in late. Just stay home. So she called in, I'm going to be late. I said, just stay home. Next thing I got a call was she was at Ridgeview. And that was my first sort of encounter with Ridgeview. She kind of got well. I don't know where she is today. I got worse. She got better and I got worse. But the next thing that happened is I kind of moved on in my career path, and I got to know a gentleman pretty well who also was an alumni at Ridgeview. And this will become important as I weave this into my story. But Don and I were close friends, and all of a sudden one day Don was not at work. And come to find out, he had just taken a short vacation here at the Institute, probably at the behest of one of his neighbors, because I think he was shooting a gun in the house at a cat. And you know how people are. So Don actually came to Ridgeview and went through the thing, and that was that. Now let me get back to my life. So here I am. Like everybody else, started 15. Okay, so now I'm from 35 to 45, just really drinking way too much, not having a bit of joy in my life, and not enjoying my life at all. I still had stuff, okay? I had a car, I had a wife, I had a dog, but it wasn't the right stuff. I wanted a bigger dog, a bigger house, a newer car, and I was miserable, and I hated everybody in the world. And it got worse and worse and worse. And I couldn't really hold down a job anymore. And I couldn't even look people in the eye anymore. And I know you know what I'm talking about, because that's kind of what we got to go through to get here. So one day, I got drunk, as I had a tendency to do, at night. And my wife would go to bed early, and I would just pour myself, you know, one of those nice tumblers full of vodka. And I'd have to get that down pretty good and then see if I could navigate my way into bed and just collapse and pass out. And that was my drill for a long, long time. And one night, I remember sitting there. I was just there, and I don't know what happened. But I got down on my knees in my house, in this couch, and I could see myself doing this now, but it took a long time to see it. I got down on my knees, and I prayed to God. I said, God, please give me one more chance at life. Just one more chance. I was on the outside. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't be any person. I was miserable. I couldn't hold a job. At one time, you know, and I don't want to say brilliant, that overstates it, but I'm a pretty sharp guy, you know. I had been around the world. My career took me around the world, did a lot of cool shit. But I was out of it. I was out of it, I was out of it, I was done. I fell down on my knees and I prayed to God. I said, God, please, just give me one more chance to get back in the game. Let me just get up to the bat one more, please, one more time. If you do this for me, I'll tell you what I'll do for you. This is real spirituality. I'll go to church every Sunday. I'll be there. Well, lo and behold, nothing happened the next day, and I wound up the next day drunk after that, and drunk after that, and drunk after that. But then I did find a job. Something really bizarre happened. I found it was the beginning of the internet. It was just beginning to form. It was before Google, before all of the stuff we got now. It was when a web crawler was popular. And it was a technology, and I just breathed. I loved that stuff. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I just wanted to be part of it. I wanted in. It was growing. It was alive. It was there. And somehow I tricked this guy into giving me a job. I don't know. I don't know how it happened, but God came through, and he gave me another chance at bat. Well, I was there about 10 days before they called me down. It was such a small office. I mean, you couldn't get away with shit. And I'd be sitting there about 4:30, like, come on, we're going to go down. We went down to the cafeteria, and the guy sat me down. And he said, listen, pal, I think you have a problem. And I was busted. I was dead cold, busted to the wall. I knew what he was talking about. He spoke to my soul. I knew what he was talking about. I stood up, I pushed back the chair, and I said, we're never going to have this conversation again. Because I knew. I mean, it was either, I knew. There was just nowhere else to go. That was it. We can't do this twice. What's the point? So I got in the car and I drove away and I went to see my friend Don, the cat shooter. And I went walking into Don's house and I'm a mess. I'm just... And Don said, you know what? It's going to be all right. Now this sounds bizarre, but it took me 20 years to understand the dynamics of what really, really happened that day that I went to go see my friend Don. He said to me something that nobody had ever said to me before. He said to something to me that I was ready to hear. He said, it's going to be all right. Okay? That was based on his experience at Ridgeview. It's going to be all right. I heard him. I wasn't fixed, I didn't know what to do next, so I got in the car and I did the next thing I knew about doing. I went to a church and I went in and I went to talk to a priest because 30 or 40 or 50 or 90 years ago I used to do that when I was a kid or something. I don't know where that came from. So I went down to the church and I walked in and I said, hey, I need to talk to somebody. They said, okay, sit here. This guy came in, a priest. They had to call out 3 trucks from Sam's to bring enough tissues for me. I mean, water was coming out of places I didn't even know I had water in it. I was crying, bawling, sobbing. And that went on for a couple hours. And finally the priest said to me, he looked at me and said, well, you're in luck because tomorrow night there's an AA meeting here. I said, whoa, cool. Because I knew I couldn't go back and drink. I knew it was over. And so the next night I showed up at this AA meeting and I didn't know anything about AA, honest to God. The very little bits I know I'd sort of gleaned from my friend Don or what have you, this when I used to come visit my secretary in here. So I showed up there and I sat there and there was a small meeting. It was a 12 and 12 meeting. And they were on step one, believe it or not. I sat down, there was a dozen people in the room and they spoke. And I thought I was in the company of the most wisest people on the planet. I couldn't believe what these people were saying. It was so smart. It was so insightful. Now, I didn't know. You know, I thought it was like the Knights of Columbus or the Elks Club. You go to AA once a week, and you sit there and you get what you can. And so I would sit there and I would like be like a sponge. But that first night I went in there, I sat down, went through the whole thing, and some old guy came up. The guy who led the meeting came up to me and says, "You know what? You don't belong here." Now, I didn't tell him this, but in my mind, I said to myself, there's no way you are going to not let me be here. I am here. It took maybe 5 or 7 years later before I realized what he said is, you really need to be at a beginner's meeting. But that's not what I heard that night. And so I kept coming back. And time went on, and it was a 12 and 12 meeting, so about every 13 weeks we'd go through, you know, the 12 steps. So after a year we'd been through it 4 times, so now I'm starting to open my big yap, because I'm a brilliant guy, right? And I'm starting to tell them what I think. Finally, this guy walks up to me after the meeting one night, and he puts his arm around me, and he says, "My name is so-and-so. I'm going to be your sponsor, because I cannot listen to you anymore." And that was my auspicious beginning into actually beginning to try to get cured. Couple more months went on, and someone said to me, and I mean, I wanted this so bad. I don't know, but not, I was at the end. I wanted this so bad. I kept on going to meetings and picking up those chips. 3 years later, I looked in the drawer to see if there were chips there. I didn't even remember picking them up. I was running so fast from this disease, you would not believe it. I never looked back. I didn't want any part of it anymore, no more. So people would suggest things to me, and one day this woman comes up to me and says, "You know, you really need to do some 12-step work." I said, "Oh, yeah?" She says, "Yeah, why don't you go volunteer at Ridgeview?" Okay, so I came down here and I met with Sam. And Sam said to me, he says, "Well, there's a gentleman here who does this." It was Wednesday night then, it was Wednesday night meeting. "Why don't you go in with him and help him out?" And so the first night I went there, and I'm sure I was a huge help to the guy. Second week I went back again, and there I was. And by the way, I did go to church every Sunday. The third week I came back, and the guy looks over and he says, "Well, I'm moving to Florida, it's all yours." And he was out of there. So that was it. I kind of inherited this mess. So I was doing that for about 5 years, and one day I went in to complain to Sam. I went in there, and I can't even remember what it was. Maybe the room wasn't the right temperature. I mean, I don't know. We used to do that meeting has moved around in so many places. We used to do it in the cafeteria. It was one of the sections in Cottage C where the air conditioner was like jet engines. It was like trying to hold a meeting somewhere between the Three Ring Circus and the runways at Hartsfield. So I went in to complain to Sam. Sam looked at me. He says, "Well, you're sober, aren't you?" That's the last time we talked about anything that I thought about, because he was right. So anyway, that was sort of my beginnings in the thing. No, so I've never been. I don't know what goes on in here, but I do know about the 12 steps, because in the years that passed, things happened. One of the things that happened was I was able to have a purpose. When I sit in Cottage City on Tuesday night, between the hours of 6:30 and 7:30, is that what time the meeting is? Is it 7:30? 6:30, yeah, 6:30, 7:30. I am bulletproof. You could be an Arab terrorist and come in that room and you can't touch me. I am bulletproof. It's the one time, 1 hour out of one day in of a week where I'm doing the right thing. I don't have to question anything. It is just the right thing. And I am absolutely bulletproof. And what absolutely astounds me is nobody has figured it out yet. Nobody's like pushed me out of the way and say, hey, listen, you old fart, get out the way. Somebody else wants to do this. It's my turn. It's a challenge for anybody out there because, I mean, it's just been unbelievable. But something else happens. And it, like I said, there's some weird things happen in recovery, especially for me. I was just, like I said, I was just happy to be clean and sober. And I left the most nightmarish conditions that I can imagine as a human being. And like I said, I ran. I would do anything anybody said. I would do it. I worked with my sponsor, all that sort of stuff. And time went by, and I stayed sober, and I stayed clean. And more time went by, and more time went by. And I offer this as an observation. And I don't know if anybody else can share this or understands or can get this feeling, but this is the way it was for me. I was at this for 5 years before I even really figured out who the hell I was. This did not come quickly. I was in this 5 years and I realized I was a miserable son of a bitch. I mean, I was clean, I was sober, I was doing the right things, but I wasn't really joyful and happy. And I remember we were doing a big book group and we came across one of the stories in the big book and it said something to the effect that happy, joyous, and free. It was something I could hear. I heard that. And that became my litmus test. Everything I did, I would hold it up to that light and say, am I happy, joyous, and free? Is this making me happy, joyous, and free? And with that were some very serious consequences because I had been married to a different woman at the time. We'd been married for 17 years and it was not making me happy, joyous, and free. We weren't right for each other. When I was using, I married her and I made a commitment. And I felt that commitment was more important than anything in the world. And I was going to keep that, God damn it, I was going to keep that commitment no matter what. You know, one of the most wonderful things about this program is you don't do this alone. Finally, you got some people, resources to turn to, so you don't got to figure out every freaking thing on your own. So I got talking with people and my sponsor and this, that, other thing. And in fact, I went back to the priest. I told the priest, I said, listen, here's where I am with this. And the priest said to me, he said, you know what? You got to get divorced, pal. You need to walk away from that. You need to let go of that commitment. And so that's probably the most difficult thing I've had to do in sobriety was just say, look, I made a mistake 17 years ago. And live up to that. Live up to the fact that, you know what? That's the way it was. And so we parted our, and things, you know, it was fairly amicable. I mean, we parted ways, and that was that. I mean, it was very disappointing. I she was hurt. But I couldn't do it. In the meantime, this fantastic job that I had with this great company, it was a dot-com, and boy, those things were like mushrooms after the rain. They came and went like that. And that opportunity came and went. But at least I was clean and sober, and I'm standing on my own 2 feet. And so, I kind of started out trying to figure out how I can put together some technology things and doing some things. And I kept going back to this happy, joyous, and free. Now, when I was in high school, when I was a kid, I was pretty much a street urchin, kind of a wise ass. I don't know if you can, probably can't figure that out now, but that's the way it was. And I remember going into the clubhouses and various places, and they had those slogans on the wall. And one of the slogans is, "Let go and let God." And I took that as a personal challenge. Again, I told you I was going to talk about joy. I took that as a personal challenge. Let go and let God. Really? I set out to see if I could break that. I set out to see what the extent of that was. I set out to see, is this true in my own feeble little way? And I did professionally what's the equivalent of stepping out of a 747 without a parachute in midair. What it's like now. This program has really showed me, and you've showed me, how to live a life that is the life that I want to live. And the life I wanted to live had those three components in it: happy, joyous, and free. That's what I'm here for. That's what you're here for. You are the crown of creation. This is it. Through evolution, it started with one cell that couldn't see, couldn't hear, couldn't feel. And that cell divided and became two cells, and then it became this, that, and the other thing. And here's where we got to. We are it. We are not growing any more toes, no more fingers. We're not growing fins. We're not growing any of that shit. Our brains are getting bigger. This is it. You are the gift. I am the gift. We are here for one purpose, to enjoy the spectacular life that we have available to us. God, I went in the Kroger today, I looked in the meat case, and I almost fainted. Jesus Christmas, do you know how much stuff we have to choose from on any given day? It's amazing. I mean, we live these incredible lives that are just, I mean, it's just amazing. Anyway, so I said, well, you know, I was in technology and I fooled with this and I fooled with that. I realized that a long time ago I had made a commitment to become an artist, and I became a professional and I did this, that, and the other thing, wound up in advertising, public relations, sales, all kinds of things, but I didn't pick up a paintbrush for 30 years. And at this point in time, I just said, you know what? 30 years, 30 years ago, I went into the swamp, and this is what I chose to do, was to make art. And I haven't picked up a paintbrush in 30 or 40 years. That's really what I want to do. And so somehow, somewhere around 10, 15 years ago, I started making art, which is like the equivalent of coming home and telling your parents, you know, I want to be an artist. It's like, are you out of your mind? Say, I'm going to live by my wits, Mom. Say, you're dumb, don't bother. That's been my evolution. Today I live a life that I can't begin to tell you how, and I'm not here to brag, I'm just here to testify. I'm just here to tell you this is the way it is. This is what happened to me in this program. This is what happened when I listened to you. This is what happened when I applied these principles. I got so free. I found so much joy. I found my wife. She's just wonderful. She puts up with me. That's a lot. We live a very rich life where we travel from city to city. 20 weekends a year selling art. It's kind of silly, you know, you stand in a tent and you sell art, you meet people, you talk to people, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. And you hear stories and you have people and you have inspiration and you translate that inspiration into something that maybe somebody else can see, and they'll write a check occasionally, give you a credit card for some of it once in a while. It's absolutely amazing. It's nothing no adult would put their arm around you and say, you know what, you really should try doing this. This is as close to being a carny as you can get. Okay, without the ride. At least plumbers, I mean, guys, you fix shit. I make shit. It's not broken. Nobody needs it. But that's what I do. I mean, and that's what my life has come down to, is this unbelievable. Now, it's, you know, my life is not perfect. I get sick. We have disagreements occasionally, what have you. But 98% of the time, I'm so involved in trying to experience that conscious contact with God. And that's an amazing quest. That's an amazing quest. Every year we pick up a chip on our birthdays, and every year it's like, you know what? It just keeps getting better and better and better. I don't know if I'm getting any better at it, but I'll tell you one thing, I am never bored for one second. Not with what I do and not with where my mind works and what I'm kind of trying to figure out, and this whole idea of a higher power and the roads it takes you down is absolutely insane. And so rewarding and so fulfilling. And, I would like to encourage people that haven't been around that long to try to focus on that joy. Because when I get to Cottage C and I see people that have relapsed, I think to myself, they haven't found that joy yet. When I was sick, I could not generate joy. I could not find joy. I didn't know where to go look for joy. There was no joy in my life. The disease had taken that off the table. We talk about returning to sanity. Well, for me, the next step was go find joy. Where's the faucet that turns on joy? And that's what my quest has been, is where, not happiness. Happiness is a little different. Joy is something that comes deep from within. It comes from the heart. Where's the joy? I today have a way to find that joy. I know where to dig. And I know where the tools and the shovel and all that shit is too. But I didn't have that. I didn't have that 21 years ago when I walked through those doors. I didn't have a clue. Every year it just keeps getting better and better and better and better and more joy and more joy. Sometimes, you know, it just, like I said, I mean, just stand there in the Kroger, look at the meat case, and you just exhale and just, hold me, will you? I can't believe I'm living in this age. I can't believe what's happening around me. It's just a fantastic, wonderful life. So I don't know, I challenge everybody, if you haven't been around for a long time and you don't think things are right, first of all, I don't think you get a clue until you're 5 years in. I don't think you, no, this, I was so busted up, but that's what it took me before I could even begin to understand what people were saying. And the second thing is, set your goals and just as high as you can. What do you want? I didn't know what I wanted. But as I went along, I really kind of found out. I wanted that joy because the greatest thing about having joy is you get to share it with other people. You make them smile. You make them laugh. They become joyful when they're around you. What a freaking gift. It's like an echo. It's like watching yourself in the mirror and make yourself laugh. I mean, who can do that? I can't. But if I can make you laugh, wow. What power. What power. So anyway, do you want me to keep a couple, two more days? I'm about out of shit. You got a time schedule on this thing? I'm kind of toast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your story. That was good to hear. You kind of made me think a little bit about joy and happiness and the difference between the two of them. It's interesting.